Hey folks, this is part two of our formerly Patreon exclusive episode, Power of the Doctor. If you're curious, we did cut off some stuff at the beginning of this episode that was exclusive to the Patreons, that will stay exclusive to the Patreons. It's just Chris and I babbling, basically. But if you want more of that, back the Patreon for Darker Hue Studios or listen to all the other episodes we've done that are Patreon exclusives. But other than that, sit back and enjoy the second half of Power of the Doctor.
So you have them attacking the base. You find out that the Cybermasters are in fact immune to goal, which Cybermen originally were not, which is always a great little thing. And you get a chance to learn that UNIT itself has started to evolve over the decades. Very important. Mm-hmm. And you get Ace jumping out of a building in a parachute to be rescued by Yaz piloting the TARDIS.
Yes.
Love it. I love when companions get to fly the TARDIS.
It's always so good, yeah. And they remark, it's like, we never got to fly the TARDIS. Nice. It was a nice bit.
And it was a nice bit for Yaz because it points out that along the way you discover, I think in an earlier episode, that Yaz during her tenure had been watching the Doctor and had like a notebook taking notes about how the Doctor pilots the TARDIS.
Oh, cool. Like, okay.
That is a great bit of character development and something that I don't think any other companions had done.
Yeah.
The Romanus could fly the TARDIS because they were Gallifreyan.
Right, but, right. That doesn't really count. And K-9 could fly the TARDIS because he's a robot.
K-9.
That's amazing.
I think Adric could to some extent, but that's because Adric was a mathematical genius or such. Yeah. The point I wanted to make. Oh, Graham in the tunnels encountering Ace. Why is Graham in the tunnels? How did Graham get under the volcano? Ace had to get the TARDIS to get to the volcano. How did Graham get there?
Plot. So there are two answers. Taking the media as presented to us answer is this is a dumb anniversary special, and this is the thing you do in dumb anniversary specials. You have people come back in implausible ways. That's just, particularly in Doctor Who anniversary specials, this is what you do. The real world answer is apparently there is a 2-hour cut of this episode somewhere.
Really?
Yeah, there's like 30 minutes of episode that was cut out, according to Chibnall. Yeah. And of course, immediately people are like, release the Chibnall cut. I suspect there probably was an entire subplot explaining how Graham got there that they just said, you know what? We don't have time. More to give an Ace, which I'm like, that is a correct decision as far as I'm concerned.
I'm not going to lie, though. I like the Snyder cut. I watched it.
You watched the Snyder cut?
I did like that black and white 4-hour epic, whatever it was.
I fell asleep.
I liked it. It struck all the right chords with me. You're not alone. Jill fell asleep.
Okay, so I feel like Jill and I are on the same page here.
Much how we're watching Andor, and I love Andor. And Jill's like, it's okay. It's kind of slow. I love it.
Well, you like Twin Peaks, so you know, you like slow things.
Yeah, some of them good, some of them bad, which is... All right.
Twin Peaks is both of us.
Vinder has no purpose. I'm glad they brought back a character, another character of color, but Vinder has no purpose other than to hold a gun at the master. Like, that is their entire role for this entire show, and they just happened upon this place through plutonium. And I guess this is part of me as like growing up watching a lot of Red Dwarf. I can't see Vinder without thinking about Lister.
Yeah, that's fair.
That could just be telling on me. Maybe it's the jacket. Maybe it's the hair. But there, I see a correlation between those two. And I wonder if Charles Craig was too busy to come and play Vinder.
I mean, maybe. I know you pointed out that he actually had a fairly long run on a Coronation Street, apparently, which I didn't know about until recently. Apparently he's got some irons in the fire. So I was like, cool. Cool on you, buddy. But in my mind, Vinder is just a name he took after he fell back through a time warp. So he couldn't change the past, so then now he's just trying to make good.
All right, I've mentioned Vinder, so I can then get into the Master, having done his dance, actually succeeds in taking over the Doctor's body. not transfer regenerations, but literally becoming the Doctor. And we assume leaving her in the husk at his body that doesn't move throughout the entire course of this. And the entire purpose of his plan, as he takes over her body, is to ruin the Doctor's name. That's it.
And so it's funny because also this is not the first time the Master has done this. Granted, it's been spin-off media. There was actually a really good audio drama called Unit Dominion, I want to say. It's 7th Doctor 1. The Doctor runs to what he thinks is a future incarnation of himself. It turns out to be the Master, but the audio is not given away for a long period of time. And it's like, this seems weird and wrong. My favorite version of this trope, however, another audio one, is there's an audio-exclusive Time Lord called The Eleven, which is amazing. Have you heard about this guy?
No.
Okay, so The Eleven is a Time Lord who remembers all of his other regenerations, and they're all active personalities. So every time he regenerates, he gets another personality. So he has multiple personalities. So he's not right in the head. And
is this like Jane from Doom Patrol?
Kind of, yeah. Kind of.
Okay.
In one of the audios, they go back because the eight is the only incarnation that actually was a good person. Everybody else, various version of evil. And so they go back to try to rescue eight. They fail. He reincarnates into the nine, but the companions stumble across the nine and reincarnate, and they go, oh, this must be the Doctor. And so nine's like, yes, I'm the Doctor. And the nine is avarice. He's greedy. And so watching someone pretend to be the Doctor and trying to choke back, just taking everything he stumbles across, is amazing. Because he's like, you know, oh, this is the TARDIS, and you know, such flippant stuff. It's like, oh, let me touch it. Don't touch that. Why? It's my TARDIS. It's mine. And it's like, oh, well, of course, the Doctor's possessive. And it's like, no, don't sit there. That's also mine. You know, it's just, you know, you should change your clothes. It's like, why? They're my clothes, aren't they? Wait, I have a closet of clothes? Are they all my clothes? And it's just, it's so good because it's like, it's the Doctor, but it's also like, just quite not. And then of course, it unravels. But again, this is the trope of another Time Lord pretends to be the Doctor and tries to ruin their name. And like, it can't be done in entertaining ways, or it could be done this way.
Yeah, basically.
Because, boy, that was a big wet fart. It's like, okay, that was your entire plan. So, to summarize, step one, enslave Gallifrey, turn them into Cybermen. Got it. Step two, recruit Daleks. How? Doesn't matter. Got them. Great. Step three, cause all the volcanoes to explode. Why? Because step four, I've gone back to it. What?
You forgot. Step two would be convert Gallifreyans into Cybermasters.
Right, sorry.
Then Daleks.
Right, then Daleks. Step five, cause all the volcanoes to explode so that the Doctor will go to step six, which is 2016, because step 5A is I actually take over Rasputin's life and spend years pretending to be Rasputin. Step six, Doctor shows up, play music to step seven, which they steal the incarnation and take on the body of the Doctor so I can wear her clothes. So step eight, I can pretend to be the Doctor and ruin her name. It's like, or hear me out, buddy. You hit the Doctor over the head, steal her clothes, and take her TARDIS. Done.
It's you don't gotta do that. You just get like a you just run around and say you're the Doctor. Literally, he has a better TARDIS. He can make it look like whatever he wants to. The Doctor constantly is regenerating. Boom! Like it's...
Set your TARDIS to look like a police box and go on with your goddamn life.
Oh, God. It's just... There is so much potential. We could even if we'd done like just a little bit more about the Rasputin, like to have a Time Lord as Rasputin and all the people that constantly tried to kill Rasputin, and he kept coming the fuck back. That would have been awesome cool. to see. Just like even one scene of it, like getting stabbed 100 times, and then the next day he comes back and tissue decompresses everybody.
Right. And this is kind of I started kind of saying, is like, I feel like this is also an encapsulation of what's wrong with modern Doctor Who, is that a lot of times, modern Doctor Who will look at the structures of past Doctor Who, but sometimes miss the heart, right? The reason why the Master has stupidly complicated plans is because he has ludicrously overambitious goals.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This is not a guy who goes, rule the universe, that's for amateurs. I'm going to actually take the universe, compress it into a small universe, put that into a second universe, and rule that one. That's the kind of guy we're talking about. Right? He doesn't do low stakes. He doesn't understand low stakes. You know, this is the guy, it's like, okay, there's a time warp going on. I'm going to erase my entire identity, shove it into a box, pretend to be I'm human, go to the end of the universe, and see what happens. I mean, you know, he doesn't do anything small. And just making the doctor sound bad is just way too small.
Yeah.
I mean, unwrite the doctor from continuity. Now that would be a cool plan. It's like the doctor never existed. Now that's a masterworthy plan.
But I think the doctor did that themselves originally as the 11th doctor somewhere along the way. So people would forget all the stuff they did.
Above stealing from itself, let me tell you.
Yeah. So that is a master's plan. And I tell you the master's plan just for the joy. And this is the one part I liked about Vinder being here. Is that he puts a gun to the master's head. The master goes, if you're the doctor's friend, you won't shoot me. And he tries a moving, it's shot by Vinder, who says, I'm a freelancer. Like that is an encapsulation of Doctor Who. Because the doctor's companions normally don't kill. But even that's iffy, because the doctor has companions and they are usually people that do all the violence that the doctor doesn't do. So the doctor can say, I'm a non-violent character.
Leela will murder you for no reason. She has killed people by accident.
She almost killed the doctor.
She will murder you. She'll think about it, but she will murder you.
It is a good assumption, even though it is wrong.
It is. It is.
And but
I'll say it's also. I think it's also relevant because the two companions that he saw from his perspective. Because Ace was post her I should murder everyone face and pre her other I murder one face if you follow the novels. And Tegan was never that person. So from the sample he had right in front of him, recency bias, it's like, oh yeah, of course, none of the companions do this. I saw the two companions and they don't do this. So, I mean, it's still a good bit within the context of the show.
And the joy of this entire thing, though, is having the doctor see her other selves.
Mm-hmm.
And the new actor that they chose to replace William Hartnell with for the first Doctor, mm-hmm. Beautifully, like that interaction and seeing them bicker and banter between themselves also is what the Doctors have done in other media, but right there on screen too. It made me, of course, think of the five Doctors. That kind of goes without saying.
I think that was intentional. I mean, especially because there were five of them there. I mean, I think there's kind of a reference there. I do like there's just kind of weird unofficial thread that the sixth and seventh doctors particularly hate each other. And it's never official because they've only ever met in kind of spinoff media. I'm double checking my math here. Yeah. I don't think they met officially on screen. But I like the fact they kind of just continue that because also the two actors have a very friendly rivalry at convention circuits and whatnot. So this has been an ongoing thing for decades. And I love that they kind of just played into that. And of course they play the eighth doctor as like, I'm just kind of above all this. Which is very Paul McGann. Speaking of which, have you seen the 50th anniversary of the, I think it's called The Other Five Doctors?
No, it's been on my to-do list to track it down, but I've never seen it yet.
Okay, so for those of you who are listening who know, this was the 50th anniversary episode where basically a lot of the actors we saw in this episode weren't approached for the 50th anniversary. And so they decided they're going to kind of stage a coup to join this, and it specifically is Peter Davidson, Colin Baker, and Sylvester McCoy. And so they call Paul McGann, and he's too busy. And so the gag is like, oh, that's why he's not in this movie. And then later, Paul shows up, and is like, why didn't you guys call me? And then just leaves, and that's his entire cameo, which is great because these four have kind of once been lumped together primarily because they work for Big Finish, and so it was great to see that specific kind of grouping together. But also, yeah, Paul's always been kind of like just a little, just a step removed from those three. So there's lots of fun meta dynamics that were happening in that moment that I really love. But also it was just, again, it's a big dub anniversary special. And so of course we're going to see old actors playing their bits. And of course the seventh doctor was super mysterious and cryptic for no fucking good reason. And it's like, thanks, Seven. Yep, that's about right.
That's why he's my favorite Doctor.
I know. And it's just like, that's so good. But why? But why, Seven?
And the number one thing for me out of this entire episode that makes all of it worthwhile, like everything from this episode, all the stuff I loved, all the stuff I disliked, is seeing the Seventh and Ace together again on screen, even if it's just yes. a holographic version of him through a hologram of the 13th Doctor. I'm not gonna lie, I made a cry a little bit when I saw that. Got me deep in the feels.
I mean, like, you know, I saw Five and Tegan together, which is nice, but also we'd seen Five on screen before with the time crash kind of bonus episode from about a decade ago. This was the first time McCoy has played Seven on screen as Doctor, and him and Ace being together again, I'm with you. It was a huge moment for me because I was like, of course they're gonna be in the same episode, but not really. And then they did that. I'm like, oh, again, it's like that was for you and me, Chris. That was just for you and me.
Yeah.
And I was like, thank you for doing that.
And I want to take a minute to say that Sylvester McCoy is probably one of the nicest people that you can meet. I met him at a convention in Maryland. And
oh, really?
I rarely ever have a big geek out moment, but I had a huge geek out moment, and he was incredibly kind. And I had my daughter with me, who at that time, I want to say, was 3 or 4. And he was perfectly engaged with her. And he spent 10 minutes just with us randomly on the floor talking to me and like making her laugh. And one of the best humans you can meet.
That's amazing. I love it when the actors we love turn out to be genuinely cool people.
It's also the same convention I got to briefly meet Andrew Cartmell.
So oh, really?
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
Wow. I just checked all the boxes there.
Still haven't met Sophie yet.
Yeah.
It's high on my list. Sorry. Personal moment. Wanted to mention it. My Doctor.
Yo, yeah.
And agreed. They go through all that. They stop the volcanoes from destroying the Earth. The rest of UNIT does not get turned into cyber people. Tegan saves Kate. Yeah.
There's one bit we skipped over that you want to talk about a little bit. How do you feel about the renegade Dalek?
Are you asking new Chris, or are you asking like old school Chris? I've evolved from old school Chris into new Chris with more of the new series.
I'm assuming old school is that's not a Dalek. What the hell are you talking about?
Yes.
So what does new Chris think?
I'm okay with it simply because it is something that they started in the first season of the new stuff in 2005 in episode 6 with Rose meeting a Dalek. And Dalek, it had killed a bunch of people, but it was also trying to engage with Rose personally and have a conversation with her. And you have Eccleston ranting about how evil Daleks are. And that showed you that maybe there's a chance, there's a spark of something in them, which then goes back to why the fourth Doctor didn't kill all the Daleks when he had the chance.
Right. I am conflicted. There's a reason why I'm bringing it up, because I'm actually genuinely conflicted. Because on the one hand, the artist side of me says about damn time, because the Daleks desperately need to be reinvented on some level. And their past reinventions have really boiled down to different coats of paint. And I'm not even exaggerating that much. Whether it's a human Dalek or a Dalek Dalek or a Robo Dalek or whatever, they're all basically the same.
You don't want to talk about Moffat's multicolored Daleks? Is that what we're going to get at?
They have different titles. That makes them different. No, it doesn't. It's still Nicholas Briggs talking in slightly different voices.
Talk about one of the most stable jobs you get, though.
Seriously, man. I've been voice acting. I've been playing this one character for almost 20 years. Good job, man. And also Cybermen. But also the Daleks are unabashedly, 100%, explicitly and repeatedly Nazi analogies. And I feel a little uncomfortable taking a symbol that is meant to be, designed to be a symbol for Nazism and going, but they're not all bad.
But that also goes into how we as creatives now have shifted from a concept that every one of every one thing is bad, regardless of if they're your main antagonist in a narrative. And then you try to go and individualize each individual sentient, note that word sentient, species of person or whatever inside of that. And that means that not all of X or Y can be evil. They may be stuck in an evil society and there are members that don't want to be and they're looking for ways not to be.
I think that's a fair middle ground, honestly. And I think that's kind of where I've landed, is that Daleks are bad. Certainly historically recognize that there are people who are members of the Nazi Party who later regret their action and tried to flee. And some even did turn on their party and join the opposite side to try to fight against them. So I'm kind of looking at it in that stroke.
Yeah. Much how there are members of the Klan that had done horrible atrocities to marginalized and people of color that sometime later tried to turn it around and begin doing good things.
Yeah. Scientologists, same thing. The people who have fled Scientology who have turned around and tried to expose and rebut a lot of the lies and damage Scientology has done. So there goes our entire Scientology demographic. It's...
Damn it. I was really hoping to get Tom Cruise on the podcast.
I really wasn't. We should watch this film. We should watch Mission Impossible at some point. But anyway, it was something I wanted to bring up because it is part and parcel of stuff we keep kind of touching on, which is that any kind of long-running media like this, there's going to be problematic elements. And Doctor Who still hasn't quite escaped its problematic elements completely. It keeps trying, but it keeps kind of getting sucked back in. Like you're saying, they make a step forward, but then they stumble. Or they do this thing, but they just do it the worst possible way. I mean, there's this kind of gravity of the Victorian adventurer, which is the strong white man who will save all of us from the evils of society. That Doctor Who, as it keeps spinning around, it gets a little further out in that orbit. It gets a little further and a little further and a little further, but it's never quite escaped that gravity.
Yeah. So it also then becomes a thing, though, that the reason I specifically mentioned the Dalek episode is that while the Dalek had done all those evil things, you notice how I keep saying Dalek or Dalek, depending on how I pronounce it. I want to do randomly. It. Kind of, it's data or data. So I'm appealing to both demographics of fans, or I'm offending both. Either way, I feel good about my choices.
No. But Chris, the two pronunciations of data are data and lore.
That one's for you, Star Trek friend. But I mentioned the Dalek episode because it has a Dalek doing all these evil things, but it has a Doctor who is our protagonist almost turning into a villain obsessed with killing it before it does anything and giving it a chance. And that has been an ongoing theme for the Doctor almost through like all the regenerations. And so that then brings into question about good versus evil and the actions that you take. Like a good person should always try to give the benefit of the doubt. It's what we do. And it's unfortunately what evil people live on to then take down good people.
We keep talking about Seventh Doctor's our Doctor, and I stand by that. But also, this is one of those shows where like all the Doctors are on some level my Doctor, right? And that's one of the reasons I loved about the Eccleston run is because I felt like it was the natural conclusion of where the Seventh Doctor was going. The Seventh Doctor was kind of starting to slide into the end, justify the beans, and then the Ninth Doctor is pulling out of that trajectory, going, I'm trying to recover from that. So there's a whole bunch of stuff in the middle, and the Eighth Doctor kind of screws it all up, and the War Doctor screws it all up. But if you're just watching Seventh to Ninth, there's a nice, smooth character trajectory that I really, really love. And Eccleston, especially in that episode, to watch him just come unhinged. Was so beautiful.
But I would include 10th in that because it shows the going up and trying to do better. But 10th shows us that you always probably stumble and he becomes a Time Lord victorious. And that is when we get super dark. And after that, it doesn't fall to that level again. Like Smith does some Smithy stuff, but it doesn't go to that same dark level. And Capaldi's Doctor is rigid, but not evil.
No, that's actually one of the things I love about Capaldi is that of the modern Doctors, I mean, before Jodie, he is if you look at his acts and look at his actions, he is the most aggressively good doctor. He's just an asshole.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of the first doctor so well. That's what I love about the first doctor, right? Is the first doctor, he's... If you get through all of the weirdness, he's ultimately a good person, but it's a long journey to figure that out. And in the middle of it, he's just a jerk. I love it because, like, especially the first season of Doctor Who, man, the Doctor is terrible. he's
Wait, are you saying first Doctor?
First Doctor.
Saying first Doctor or 12th? Yeah.
No,
he tried to kill somebody with a rock.
Yeah. And he's like, hey, I want to check this place out, but everyone's mad about it, so I'm going to sabotage my own TARDIS and go, oh, it's broken. Guess we got to go look at the city. I'm like, you're an asshole. And I love it. But the 12th Doctor is much more of the, oh, yes, I'm prickly, and people don't like me, and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, but it's because he just wants to cut through the bullshit. It's like, no, this is the right thing to do. Why are we still talking? And it's like, on some level, that really appeals to my punk rock side of like, let's just get to the fucking problem.
But he's also, well, we'll say Gallifreyanized instead of humanized, is that at the end of the day, though, he asked Clara, am I a good man? Because he may have done all that and believed it, everything he was doing, but there's always that doubt about if you're a good person after doing it, how he did it.
Right.
And like, that's the heart of Doctor Who.
I believe he's the only, I still believe he's the only incarnation who could have genuinely forgiven the Master. He does. Spoilers, I guess. But he actually forgives the Master. Every other Doctor kind of gets to the edge and like, yes, Ten was sad that the Master died, but he didn't really forgive him. He was sad that the Master died. But none of them actually could do it, but he's the first one to go, no, if you do the thing, I will trust you. If you don't do the thing, I won't trust you. Do the thing.
For anyway. Modern Doctors, yes. If we include original Doctors, I would also say Seventh could. Just from survival of on the cat planet.
Like
he's not begging the Master not consistently. To do these
not consistently. At any point in time, the 12th Doctor, just yes, he does forgive the Master at that moment, but I also believe 7 absolutely would backslid.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think 12 would. I think 12 would be like, nope. You've got
if you're going to add caveats onto your discussion point, if you want to clarify, it's not the same.
Jesus Christ, we are nowhere near this episode now.
Like I said, we're going to have to change it to like Chris and Eddie ramble about Doctor Who under the premise of talking about the power of the Doctor.
Patreon people, you are getting your money's worth, let me tell you that. Or we're getting your purchase, I'm not sure which, but you're getting a lot of content, that's for sure.
Or if we have to, oh shit, we need content releases, you guys are getting some great stuff for free that my patrons paid for. Thank you.
This rate might be 2 episodes.
All right, where are we at? Where are we at? Let's bring it back to the episode.
Okay, so we went through the incarnations. That's great, blah, blah, blah. Graham. They destroy the Dalek volcano machine, which is an amazing sentence. The Dalek volcano machine, Chris.
maybe we should put that on stickers and promote the podcast for it with it.
No, that's my band name. My next band name is going to be called Dalek Volcano Machine.
All right, so... Then you have the big climactic scene between the Master, who you believed was dead, but crawls out anyway.
Of course.
Gives a speech about if he can't be the doctor can't be the doctor, and the enslaved energy being before being freed hits Doctor with energy beam, and the Doctor is forced to regenerate. And we get our last big scene aboard the TARDIS with Tegan, Ace, Yaz, and the Doctor. Ah. It's a beautiful scene.
Before we get to that, this is another thing that bugs me about this episode, and it's an ongoing trend. Why the Doctor regenerates is either an amazing story or a bullshit premise, and there's like no middle grounds. I mean, obviously the peak example is Sylvester McCoy bonking his head on the console and regenerating because Colin Baker wouldn't come back to do his job. But even looking at the modern era, like,
but wait, can we give context to that though?
Oh yeah, sure.
I don't blame Colin Baker because actively trying to kill the show at that time. If I remember right, and if I don't, this is rumor and hearsay, but the producer was also trying to sleep with his wife or something, but there's a lot of hate Colin Baker was getting from them and pressure. And it's been 18 months after they canceled the show, and there's a lot of drama associated with it.
Yeah, and they're also doing stuff like they told me couldn't do any other things because it was exclusive to them, but also they were offering him a pay cut to do the next season. So yeah, no, I mean, he got screwed. Don't get me wrong. I don't blame him for not coming back. But then they're just like, yeah, just, you know, Sylvester, wear this curly wig and hit your head in the console, and that's it. We'll do it. But even in the modern thing, it's like Nine sacrifices himself and regenerates. 10 sacrifices himself, but didn't kind of didn't need to, but kind of did. Regenerates.
You would 11, let Wolf die? You would have let Wolf die.
What I'm saying is that.
And he's nodding while he's talking. All right, no, he's not. I just have to say it.
No, what I'm saying is that if it had not been a regeneration episode, he would have found some clever way to get Wolf to escape.
Yes.
He only died because it's a regeneration episode. 12 died because it's a regeneration episode. Jodie Whittaker gets shot with a stray energy beam. And I was mad when I saw it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was just like, you had this whole setup of someone literally stealing your body. You undo that and then get shot with the equivalent of a stray bullet. Bah. And you go, whoops, guess I'm David Tennant now. Ugh, so mad.
Yeah, like got nothing for, if anything, it would have been, I think, a more fulfilling story arc overall if for some reason they couldn't have gotten her back her body and the only thing they could have done was to kill her and Yaz had to kill the doctor.
Yeah. Or even if you don't want that dark of an ending, like, okay, I can push the master out, but the stress has caused me to exhaust my body and I have to regenerate.
Yeah.
You know, or the other incarnations talk me through it, but I have to actually shift my body to purge the master and therefore regenerate as the process of purging him. You had the setup there that would have been perfect, but you just undo all of that and then.
And it's not a shock. And it can't even say it's for a shock ending because we know it's our last episode. Like, that's
right. Right. It's like, why don't you just put a curly wig on her head and call it a day? That's why I set that up, you see. It's a payoff. That's humor, Chris.
It's only humor if you do it three times.
I did do it three times. I set it up. You explained it. I mentioned it again. And then I paid it off here.
Oh, good point. Good point. Kudos
to you, sir. I lured you into my trap.
Kudos to you, sir. And for if this is your first time hearing our podcast, you will not get you have to do it three times joke because that's a reoccurring joke from under something else. So we get a scene, and even her last moments of dying are just frustrating. She's sitting on top of the TARDIS with Yaz, where they don't come to any sort of conclusion with ice cream, and her hand's glowing. Compared to Tennant, when Tennant had a long time before he died, Tennant had like 15 minutes of going to past moments, seeing past people, and giving like this great speech, and even saying like that big thing of, I don't want to go, and then it happening, like, there's gravitas to it. This is very quiet, very, I hate to even say the word, but it's very like meek compared to the exit she should have gotten.
Right. It's the, well, I guess it's time. And again, I recognize why it was done this way. And also backstage, part of the reason is because they didn't know who's going to replace her. So that these were kind of shot separately. So it was scripted separately too. So like, it was kind of okay, here's the ending, fill in the rest. But having her go, well, I guess my time's done. Hopefully the next person's great. Oh, look, it's David Tennant again. really feels like, it feels like the Doctor herself is kind of invalidating her own incarnation.
Yeah.
And again, now, I understand why. I understand the business reasons why. I'm generally on board with the business reasons why. But it should have been a better final speech. And Doctor Who has had plenty of really fantastic regeneration speeches. And this is not one of them.
No. And having said that, though, I will not lie. As Tennant is my second favorite Doctor for the 10th version, I was super excited to see Tennant come back. And I knew what he was going to say
sure
as soon as I saw him.
What? Yeah.
And this is also, I think, the only time the Doctor has ever regenerated into other clothes.
That's true. That's, that has been pointed out.
Which,
and as much as I've been pitching on this, I will say it is better than being gunned down by Chinese gangsters.
I don't know about that. I'm iffy. That is how they took out my favorite Doctor. I'm still iffy if that one's worse or if this one's worse.
I'm still mad about that one, Chris. It's been 30 years. I'm still mad about that one.
Yeah. Ugh. And so we don't. And we before we end, we brought the big juice up for us. But you get the companions sitting around together in a support group, and that Kate is sort of like the driving force behind. And I go back to myself, and I still think, where the fuck is Martha Jones when I look at the group of people together?
So
she's literally worked for UNIT.
I'm going to defend this scene by pointing out the larger problem with the whole episode. As far as I understand, she literally works for UNIT. She's not a freelancer. She is a 100% UNIT person.
She worked for UNIT. We last saw her in one of the shittiest scenes that still pisses me off to this day, is that her and fucking Mickey Jones get married and there are freelancers running around and they're saved by the Doctor. Two black characters at the time, you got to get them married. What the fuck? Martha Jones is like so up here and little Mickey is down here, who should have been in an alternate universe.
I agree with that. I thought she was still working for UNIT when she was married to him. I may have been wrong on that. I have no defense.
Sorry, the hate and that rage you feel for the Seventh Doctor being gunned down, I feel for that last scene with Martha.
And honestly, it would be even better if she was in that scene. It's like, oh, well, I'm this person, this person, blah. It's like, what happened to you? It's like, oh, I got married. And, you know, someone like Joe Jones go, oh, I did too. It's like, what happened to your husband? It's like, oh, he died. Why? I killed him. I was like, yep.
But you were going to say something more pertinent than my
No, it's just more to the point that given her past UNIT experience, she should have had a much larger role in this show. Because if the whole conceit is we hire former companions as freelance consultants, Martha Jones should be at the top of your list. Yeah. And she wasn't. And that bothered me.
And I would even go so much to say, even if, I didn't love the show that much, they should have pulled in some of Torchwood. They would know who Torchwood is. I can live without Jack. I love Jack, but I hate Jack at the same time. And that's another problematic actor.
Yeah, not as problematic.
As much.
Bring in Yanto Jones, bring in any of the other Torchwood crew and say, hey, you know what? We folded Torchwood in the UNIT. Great. My gut says that with the new UNIT show, they may try to bring some of those actors in to do exactly that because they have more space to kind of fill out the cast, and they're going to need to fill out the cast. And so bringing some of those back, I think, would be a nice kind of balance to that. There's actually a rumor, and this is just a rumor, but I would love it if they did. Rumor is they may get at least one or two of the kids from the Sarah Jane Adventures because they're adults now into UNIT. And I'm like, that'd be cool.
That'd be awesome. Because I'm showing Zora the Sarah Jane Adventures right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because I tried to show her that Martha episode I mentioned, but it was a little bit too intense for her, so we stepped back for Sarah Jane.
Fair enough. The support group idea is great. I'm hoping it's something they play with.
So now, the game, because we're running long, but you know you're going to have a game. You should have assumed that.
Yep.
So, Eddie, you are the script writer for the 13th Doctor. You've had all of Chinball's stuff. They fire Chinball, and they say, we've got one episode left with Jodie. Make it the best. What do you do?
Okay. After everything we just said, I'm going to have to throw my hands up and say my episode probably would look a fair amount like this one. Right? Because on paper, this is not a bad swan song. The problem is they crammed way too many cameos into it. Right? And as much as I hate to say this, they probably should have had one classic companion come back. And of course, it's going to be Ace. They should have one classic companion come back. One either one of the her era companions come back, or none of them. Because again, we have that scene at the end. We can cram all those cameos in there. We don't need to have them littered throughout the show like we did. Vendor's piece, maybe keep that there because Vendor's not a guy who's going to show up to a support group, right? But the rest, you can have Tegan in that group. You can have, you know, Dan in that group even. You know, you could have Graham in that group. You don't need to have them interspersed through the show like that. Use that extra time to center the whole thing around Yasmin's doctor. Because what this show, again, I love the show as an anniversary episode, but that was not its goal. Its goal is this is Whitaker's episode. And you need to focus on what made her era special. And all this episode told me is that Chibnall does not know what made that era special. And granted, I've not watched a lot of it, so I can't say what makes it special, but it's super clear that if you have one companion with your incarnation all the way through, you make it about that relationship and you make that the heart and center of it. The other piece is the Master's Plan. Keep it. It's all ridiculous. I don't care. Love it. but I would change it to about Yaz. It's the, I want to take over the doctor's place because I want to understand why. Why are you people so important to her? Why are you important and I'm not? And build that relationship because it's the, we were friends and he threw me, or she threw me away to be with you people, right? And then say, but I'm a doctor now, so you have to love me now. And then again, it keeps it centered on the relationship in Doctor and Yaz. Even if it's the master plan of Doctor, it's still about that relationship. And have you can spend some really good time, especially with those two actors. Those two actors are great. Have them really sit there and go, but why don't you love me now? I'm her now, so you should love me. That transitive property, that's how this works, right? I could see the master making that speech of like, I just don't get how this emotion thing works. I mean, I get evil and I get hatred. I got that down. What's love? I had a wife. I killed her. That didn't work out. She killed me again. It's all good. That's fine. Yeah, I've summarized the entire Sim era in two sentences.
Wow.
But it's like, that was what a lot of this episode was missing, because the overblown ludicrous plan was not the problem. The plot doesn't entirely make sense, not the problem. Because frankly, if you don't on board with that, you're on board with Doctor Who as a concept. That's just Doctor Who. Doctor Who just, it just bold face goes, this is what we're going with now. Either accept it or get off the bus. The problem is that this episode wasn't about anything except for being Doctor Who. And that's frankly the problem with the show right now. The show is about being Doctor Who. It's not about anything. That's the reason why I like 12, is because for a while, there was actually something happening. Like, I did not give a shit about Clara until the 12th Doctor. And to have someone basically go to Clara and say, like, going, you're not really that special, was interesting. Because it's just like, okay, yeah, you hang around with me and all that, but I'm the special one. And it's like that, just to see that arrogance was like interesting. It was about something. It was about the doctor coming to terms with, how do I can't deal with this pain internally. I have to externalize it. What if I just hurt the people around me? How does that play out for me? Oh, that didn't go well. But that was interesting. It was about something. It was about the next stage of grief, right? 11th Doctor era, get past some of the weird timey-wiminess of it, but it was about something. The first era, 9th Doctor's era, was absolutely about something. It was about a man who's trying to recover from a horrible war. Yeah. So when Doctor Who is about something, it's great. When Doctor Who is about just being Doctor Who, it's not good. I will still watch it because I'm a fanboy, but it's not good. And it's weirdly, I feel like Jodie got done wrong because it never quite found out what it was about.
That's perfect. That's why these games are always so much fun with you.
It's like it's a rant about friendship.
Any final thoughts on our very short episode of Eddie and Chris rant about Doctor Who for almost 2 hours?
I the whole time I was debating ending this with talking about how our next episode is going to be Arrow, just to piss you off. But we're talking about Arrow now. We're trying so hard. No, we actually aren't going to do that. I will say this episode has proven what we already knew, which is that we need to do an actual Doctor Who season, like, stat. Because clearly we tried to cram a whole season of Doctor Who into this.
We focus less on the episode and more about Doctor Who itself, which in some ways is why I chose this episode instead of just one that we know already that we go into. But this one that touches on the new and the old, crams and companions, and in of itself is a mess.
Yeah. I mean, and in a way, you're right. That's a good choice because, you know, the episode's about just being Doctor Who. So it makes sense that we just talked about being Doctor Who fans. So that worked out well. I will also say, going back way to the beginning, we talk about kind of our brief for this season or this podcast as a whole. I still really liked it. I still really had fun watching it, even when it made me mad, even when it frustrated me. That's just Doctor Who in a nutshell. But again, like any media, which is, I mean, I don't want to calculate, but it's like we're talking thousands of hours of video, right? This is a lot of TV to watch. I have watched everything in Doctor Who, but that is over the course of decades. I don't know if I could sit down and watch it all start to finish. That would be maddening. There's a lot of Doctor Who to watch. But so now it's going to be good, but I love the show. And this episode is everything I love and hate about it all at once. It's a glorious, ludicrous, amazing, terrible mess.
Yeah. That's a perfect encapsulation of it. So since we do this on the normal podcast, if people are looking for you in the world, physically, not online, where could they find you, Eddie?
They could find me walking the streets, randomly screaming at the sky. you'll appreciate this. Right now, you'll probably find me wandering London because I'll probably be ecstatic at having received Tom Baker's autograph because he doesn't do conventions anymore because he's 93. He apparently is doing a brief kind of offline signing. So basically people sign up and just say, here's £50. Here's the picture I want. Autograph it to my name and send it to me. And he's doing like,
that's amazing.
So I'm going to get his autograph, which is, and I'm going to be like, just probably wandering the street screaming at the sky about how amazing it is. Because my goal is to eventually try to get autographs of all the living doctors.
Wow, that is incredible. Can I just like send you £50 and have you get one for me too?
Next time it happens, yeah. This was kind of a like literally was a, hey, you have like a day to sign up.
I was like, oh shit. That's incredible though. Yeah.
And I it's funny, like one of the fans was like, hey, so I want to spend £50. Like, okay, why? It's like, because Tom Baker's doing an autograph session, my wife's like, why are we stalking? And I'm like, okay. Thank you, honey. You know me. because she also got me Colin Baker's autograph when she was working at a convention. I couldn't go. She actually got Colin Baker's autograph for me. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. Other than that, if you want to find me online, you'll find me at pugstady.com. That's P-U-G-S-T-A-D-Y. That's my Twitter handle. It may be my Mastodon handle. I am debating migrating over or duplicating my account there. I'm not quite sure yet. So by the time you hear this, check me out there. I might be there. Probably at Dice Camp. That's where I'm looking at. And then this is my website, pugstady.com, or you can find me on the Darker Hue Discord, where we and Chris are probably talking about Big Fetish Audios, which is generally what we end up talking about. How about you?
And if you're looking for me, you can find me on the Patreon that you're hopefully already subscribed to, that you heard this on. Or you can find me on Mastodon at DHS, or on Twitter at @Darker_Hue. I'm on both. I kind of post the same thing on either, see which one works. It's the Dice Camp version of Mastodon. I will say that Mastodon is a great concept, but in execution, it is not giving the same sort of oomph that Twitter has, even though Twitter is a raging dumpster fire that we should all try to get off of, but we can't because of gravity that keeps pulling everyone back.
Yep.
All that said, if we do another one of these, let me know what you'd like to hear, or you just may get Remembrance of the Daleks, or whatever I randomly decide you may want to hear.
Right. We have a vague plan, which we say that in genre list, but I want to point out that's even less of a plan than genre list has. So good luck, suckers. But we will probably make more of this, but certainly let us know, because at some point in time we're going to go, I don't know what's on TV right now.
Awesome. Thanks for doing this, Eddie. And thank you all for your support. I appreciate it.
Bye.